Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Divyani Chaturvedi, research analyst at ISAS, and I will be your host for today's episode. India hosted the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's Foreign Ministers Meeting in Goa on May 3rd and 4th. The meeting was attended by foreign ministers from all 8 member countries, along with Iran and Belarus, which will be inducted as the new members of the SCO this year. Just as the foreign ministers firmed up the agenda for the SCO summit in July, issues of regional security, economic cooperation, connectivity, and cultural cooperation were discussed. The meeting also brought to surface existing bilateral strains and geopolitical tensions between member states, making viewers question the effectiveness of the SCO. As India assumes the presidency of not just the SCO forum, but also the G20, it will be treading a diplomatic tightrope due to its proximity to the G20. The act of balancing both can be a hit or a miss for the country's foreign policy. To further understand the nuances of this geopolitics and India's role at the SCO, we are honored to have with us Ambassador Nirupama Rao. Ambassador Rao retired as the Foreign Secretary to the Government of India, the senior-most position in the Foreign Service. She served as India's former ambassador to the United States, China, and Sri Lanka. Ambassador Rao has taught at the Brown University and at Columbia University and has authored the book, The Fractured Himalaya. Again, we are so happy to have you. Welcome, Ambassador Rao.
Thank you so much, Devyani. I'm very happy to be doing this podcast this morning. It's a privilege, and thank you so much for having me.
So, ma'am, my first question to you would be, the context in which the foreign ministers' meeting occurred seems to have complicated the aims of the SCO and interests of the individual countries that are part of it. India's Minister for External Affairs linked the normalization of relations with Pakistan to the issue of terrorism. He also drew attention to the border clashes with China. At a broader level, Russia is also accused of infringing on one of the SCO's founding commitments of respecting territorial integrity. The SCO meeting also occurred at a time in which questions are increasingly being asked about the future of multilateralism. Yet the expansion of the SCO is clearly on the agenda. So in your opinion, how do you foresee the future of the SCO?
Well, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization has grown over the years, starting out as just the Shanghai Five in 1996 and then being established as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in 2001, when all the Central Asian countries, former constituents of the Soviet Union, the erstwhile Soviet Union, joined Russia and China to create the SCO. And subsequent to that, you have seen further expansion with Pakistan and of course, India joining the SCO in 2017. And as you mentioned, the induction of Iran and Belarus is also on the cards. So the SCO has grown from just that constituency of five countries to quite a large Eurasian political, security, economic cooperation organization over the years. And India's presence in the SCO does have a lot of validity, a lot of sense. India is as much a Central Asian country, I've always said, as a South Asian country, as much as it is a Southeast Asian country, because India is very omnidirectional in many ways. If you look at the area of Kashmir, for instance, it is essentially abutting Central Asia. Its historical links have been with Central Asia. All the connectivity has, in a sense, been northward as much as it has been southward through Punjab into the rest of the country. Similarly, where our northeast regions are concerned, it's very much a gateway to Southeast Asia, ethnically, historically, geographically, and I hope in the future, in terms of more regional integration, we will see much more of a flow of of two-way cooperation with the rest of Southeast Asia as far as Northeast India is concerned. And then you have, of course, South Asia and the Indian Ocean that connects us with the Indo-Pacific. So the importance of India's presence in the SCO, I think, is, I mean, everybody accepts that. It's not something you really need to argue about. Now, coming to the last meeting, the meeting of the foreign ministers, which happened just a few days ago in Goa, well, I think you have to see the context also in which it happened. The geopolitical situation surrounding India today is pretty complicated and complex. And two of our neighbors, China, with which we share a very long land border of almost 3,500 kilometers, and with which both countries, India and China, have territorial claims over each other, which makes the situation already an already tense situation very complicated. Plus, of course, you know the history of India's relations with Pakistan. The Pakistani foreign minister, Mr. Bilawal Bhutto Zardari, was there in Goa, as you know. And every time I've, you know, given the history and the context and the complexity of India-Pakistan relations, you know, whenever there is an India-Pakistan presence at such meetings, especially when it takes place on Indian soil, or even for that matter, on Pakistani soil, the focus in many ways, I think, from the public space, I'm not talking of the professional space here, I'm talking of the public space, is often directed towards the bilateral relationship. You know what I mean? And we are a large, thriving, vibrant, loud democracy. And there are many voices in the amphitheater that often, you know, raise this emphasis on the India-Pakistan relationship or the India-China relationship. So you must look at all that happened also in that context. But I believe as far as the SCO is concerned, it is an organization which India sees a lot of validity in terms of its membership. There are issues of connectivity, there are issues of counterterrorism, there are issues of regional integration, there are issues of things like fighting against the drug menace, money laundering. So, in the context in which India finds itself today, this attitude or this approach and this policy of multi-alignment, which India is following vis-a-vis many regional organizations, continues to have a lot of sense and a lot of meaning.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Rao. I think you very pertinently placed India geopolitically as well as in terms of its positioning as to how it should be approaching SCO. So I think my next question then would just be a secondary one, which is that as the president, what are India's priorities for the SCO? And what will be certain opportunities and challenges that the Indian presidency at the SCO is likely to face?
Well, I did refer to the number of areas of cooperation which India seeks to further with SCO member countries. I spoke of regional connectivity, I spoke of counterterrorism, I spoke of the threat and menace of money laundering and the issue of drugs. You know, we have every reason to build a solid front within the SCO to combat these menaces. The issue, I think, where we need also to give more focus is for countries within the SCO to direct their attention to this agenda, to see how it is furthered, how it is deepened, how it is expanded. Now, India, for instance, it has laid a lot of emphasis on the development of Chabahar port in Iran and the whole international north-south corridor, through which connectivity to Afghanistan, given up the problems in the relationship with Pakistan, can be established, and also to the other Central Asian neighbors, in many ways, neighbors of ours historically. And if you look at the entire tapestry of the diversity of India, you understand the connections that we have with Central Asia. So I think the when India ta has taken has taken on the presidency, we look forward to the summit later this year and to welcoming all the leaders of of the SCO there. I think the focus will very much be on this, and the fact that India has, in the midst of, the geopolitical churn that we see around us today, leaders like Prime Minister Modi have been stressing on the real concerns that should be at the center of our attention at this time as the Global South. In many ways, all of us in this organization have reason to identify with the Global South. I mean, the Russia may have perhaps, at this moment, the whole attention being diverted on the war in Ukraine and its difficulties and its differences with the Western countries. But I'm talking of the larger constituency of SCO members. And this is where I think our attention, we should be intensifying cooperation in these areas. And India's focus will be on issues like climate change, on pandemics, on counterterrorism, on issues that concern our collective economic development in many ways. So I think the agenda is pretty clear, it's pretty coherent. And once again, I'd like to come back to the fact that India is an omnidirectional country, which focuses on multi-alignment, will devote a lot of attention to seeing how we can take the agenda that involves all of us within the SCO forward.
Thank you so much, Ambassador. I think you rightly mentioned the agenda. In fact, in the Secure SEO agenda, which was recently launched by the government, India emphasizes on the group's responsibility towards encountering terrorism, focusing on connectivity, and increasingly improving economic cooperation, which we see through talks on digital connectivity, digital payments. So as we have progressed through the year, how do you see this presidency doing that?
Exactly, as I mentioned, Devyani, in my earlier remarks, India will be reaching out to all the member countries of the SCO. And I think there is a give and take here. We will welcome ideas from the other countries. We will seek to intensify the secure agenda that you mentioned in our talks and in our communication with the member countries, and seek to build cooperation from the ground, literally. This is not a top-down process. It emanates from the needs, from the interests, and from the ambition of the people involved in this region. Now, take the SCO. I think 30% of the global GDP is covered within the membership, and 40% of the world's population. So this is not a small organization. I think it's an organization to watch, and I think it's also a measure, I think, of the openness of India's foreign policy. The way it is seeking balance, the way it is seeking leverage, the way it is seeking to further the interests, obviously, of the people of India, but in the process also stressing the need for common ground with many of the other countries in the region.
Absolutely, Ambassador Rao. I think the Indian presidency has introduced a new component in this aspect of their presidency, which is that it focuses on new components such as appointing Varanasi as the tourism capital of the SCO, organizing a shared Buddhist heritage conference, and creating working groups on startups and traditional method medicine, all with the aim of improving socio-economic and cultural ties. What do you make of these new additions?
I think that they are excellent ideas and they are very constructive initiatives because, they begin with a central idea that people need to be connected more and more, that we need to reach out to each other, ensure better communication channels, especially among the young people in the region. We need digital connectivity. India's United Payments Interface, for instance, has been such a success in terms of the billions of transactions that take place every day within the Indian population. I think the success of that platform is something that India would like to share with other member countries. And in this time when we in the Global South seek that independence and seek that that self-reliance, if you may call it, in terms of how to protect our interests, to be, in a sense, buttressed and protected from, unilateral economic measures, for instance, that affect us as in terms of our trade, in terms of our payments, international payments. I think there's a, the scope for this kind of dialogue is immense, and the scope for really putting into place and concretizing such cooperation is also immense. So that is really India's attitude. When we know when the government and when our prime minister speak of the world as one family, this is an approach, I think, that takes its meaning from all these ideas and concepts and policies that I just referred to.
Thank you so much for your insightful remark on that aspect of India's presidency. As a veteran in understanding geopolitics, my question to you would be more as somebody who has been part of India's foreign policy making, how would you judge the success or lack thereof of India's presidency at the SCO?
I think that India is a leading power in our region, and its membership of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is a recognition, I think, in a sense, an endorsement of the importance, the weightage that India brings to such forums, the meaningfulness, the credibility of India. So it's this is not this is not a time, I believe, to even question whether India's presence or India's leadership is successful or not. The fact that India has persisted, has continued with developing its membership within the SCO, the expansion of cooperation, the induction of new ideas, and the dialogue that it is transacting with all countries. For instance, we have our difficulties with China. We have enormous problems with Pakistan. But the SCO and India's approach to the SCO has meant that we have, in a sense, been able to transact dialogue and cooperation within the SCO on issues like counterterrorism, for instance. The Chinese and the Pakistanis have participated in exercises within India under the regional anti-terrorism mechanism that the SCO has. So I think the SCO, in a sense, is a multi-channel or a multi-lane, let me call it, a highway through which we are able to develop these ideas of cooperation and actually, as I said, concretize such cooperation so that it makes a difference for the region. And I think the SCO therefore brings some balance and brings greater, a more steady and a more secure equilibrium to the region. And I think every member country of SCO needs to look at the organization and their involvement in it with that perspective in mind.
The Chinese Foreign Minister Qin Gang asserted that countries must maintain strategic autonomy and was critical of what he described the United States to be doing, which is meddling in regional affairs. Would you read this statement within the context of India's relations vis-à-vis the US on one hand and India's balancing in terms of the Russia-Ukraine crisis on the other? More generally, how does China's approach to India's geopolitical positioning become better through the SCO? If not so, then how?
China, of course, is a power that has risen in many ways, and its geopolitical weight, its military and economic power. I mean, we are not questioning that presence that it brings to such organizations. But I would, in all honesty, and I think I know this relationship with China quite well, having dealt with it for over almost 4 decades now. I would urge my Chinese friends to look at the geopolitical situation with a little more maturity and a little more knowledge of the intricacies and the complexities of the situation that we face today. And the fact is that, you know, India has reason to develop its relations with the United States. We are two leading democracies. We have many, many reasons to deepen and intensify what we call our comprehensive global strategic partnership today. And it's not a partnership that is directed against any country. It is essentially when India takes such steps, India is pro-Indian. India is not being pro-American. It's not being pro-Russian. It is being pro-Indian. And just as I'm sure the Chinese have always transacted their foreign policy priorities in that fashion. So every country has its sovereign right to pursue the relationships that it wants to pursue. And India, I believe, has been mature in its in the approach that it has taken to keeping the dialogue channels and communication pathways open to all countries and seeking cooperation with everybody. It's a fact that with China and with Pakistan, there are genuine bilateral differences that we need to resolve over time and in due course, and to the mutual interest of each of these countries, all of us involved. But that's something that will take time. It's not going to happen overnight. But in the meantime, I think this larger regional context offered by organizations like the SU, or for that matter, India's involvement, you know, its dialogue with the ASEAN, you're in Singapore, our membership of the Quad, our dialogue, our very close relationship with Japan, for instance. So India has literally friends all over the world, and I think India is entitled to that by virtue of its weight, as I said, by virtue of its geographical position, by virtue of its geopolitical importance, by virtue of its growing economic strength, and the fact that today it's the largest country in the world, as we know.
On a related note, given the evolving geopolitical terrain, how do you assess India's position in the SCO and BRICS, which are seen to be tied in important ways to China's international interests and also in the Quad, which effectively positions itself as a counter to China's influence in the Indo-Pacific and in the global order? Will India need to grapple with the implications of that despite being a part of the SCO?
Well, I think, Devyani, India is perfectly capable of calibrating all these relationships that it pursues today. India looks, as I said, it looks to the east, it looks to the west, it looks north and south. It looks to all these places because it seeks to further its interests. I mean, that may sound a very cliched response, but every country, I think, is seeking to do that. And with the West, with the Western countries, with democracies like the United States and with Japan and with, you know, our very close partner, Singapore, for instance, or with Australia, we seek, you know, our own development through these relationships. There are, of course, democratic principles that bind our countries. There's a whole history of migrations that have brought us together. Look at Singapore. I think it's a living reflection of that. And we look to better technology, we look to capital for our economic development. I think the economic development of India is at the core of what we do, because as we are today the largest country in the world in terms of population, and there are miles to go before we, you know, can say to ourselves that we have achieved all that we want for our people. So that is the central focus, and much of our relationship with our close friends and neighbors in Asia and Europe and in America is being conducted and transacted on that basis. I referred to the relationship with Russia. What a, you know, special and privileged partnership it is, because it has a time-tested foundation. Our relationship with Russia. We have our defense cooperation from the point of view of energy security. Russia is a very important partner. And while the war in Ukraine concerns all of us, the fallout of that war the impact of that war is felt everywhere. But in that situation, countries like us, like India, have to look out for ourselves. We have obviously always to be pro-India. And what have we to ensure for India? We will do all that is necessary. We have the confidence, we have the capability, and I believe we have the credibility to do what we have to do to secure our interests. And that is why countries like the United States, for instance, while there may be calls for India to take a more overt stand on the war in Ukraine, they also understand not only why we do what we do, but also the weight and the contribution that India makes to balancing the situation in the Indo-Pacific today. India brings a lot of assets to the globe, to the regional and global stage. So you have to keep that in mind also.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Rao. So, trying to summarize what you said, I think it's that India's heavy weight and its omnidirectional approach is going to be the solution to this diplomatic tightrope that it will have to walk in this year and moving forward when it comes to its relationships with China, Russia, United States, and the rest of the West. Not to forget our Central Asian partners. So thank you for that. I think our listeners will be extremely enriched by this conversation, and I hope they enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed interviewing you. It is always such an honor to see women who reach such high positions and can contribute to not just Indian foreign policy, but for public policy in general. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here, Devyani. I wish you the best.
Thank you. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.